Okay, boker to everybody. We do like to start on time. A pleasure to see everybody, and welcome back, I guess, for our second Zoom season on Perkei Avot. So what I'd like to do this morning is I want to give a sort of a brief overview on a few points on Perkei Avot, and then we're going to actually pick up from where we left off last year. If anybody remembers, they get the 10 extra points. It's towards the end of the third parak. But just let me make a few introductory points, some of which I may have made last year, some of which I don't think I did. And even if I did, I'm sure that's fine. I'm sure many people are not here, and it's good always to review for all of us. The first thing I'll say is it's very interesting. We all know that there is a custom to study Perkei Avot between, you know, Pesach and Shavuot. So before we get to, we'll discuss why we have such a custom. That notion is sort of a strange notion. I'm not aware of really any other, text or material that I say you're supposed to study this at this time. Okay, Daf Yomi today, you know, but there's not a specific time. We lucked out this year for the first time ever. Masechet Psachim finished just in the lead up, like the week before Pesach. So that was kind of, you know, cool. But we don't think we learned this time. There's no such thing like that in our tradition. The only idea we have is on Yontif, that the Gemara in Megillah says that the Moshe Rabbeinu made a decree. It's interesting. Moshe Rabbeinu, he makes rabbinic decrees too. Like you think Moshe is the giver of the Torah. So what Moshe says is a Torah law. That's not true. What God says through Moshe is the Torah law. Vayedaber Hashem Moshe Lemor. What Moshe says, Moshe was a rabbi, and rabbis are allowed to make decrees. So Moshe made some decrees. I think Sheva Brachas is attributed to Moshe. So the Gemara in the end of Masechet Megillah says that Vayedaber Moshe at Moadei Hashem al Bnei Yisrael. That's how we make, you know, Kiddush on Yontif. That Moshe spoke to the Jewish people. So Moshe made a decree, an ordinance, I guess, that we should study Hilchot Pesach on Pesach and Hilchot Sukkos on Sukkos and Hilchot Pur. You know, we should learn the laws that apply at any time. But we don't have any other things. So Pirkei Avot in the summer. So I want to argue this. I don't know if it's, true. I thought of it that Pirkei Avot is really a continuation of that idea. That Perkei Avot is the learning the laws of Shavuot before the holiday of Shavuot. What do I mean by that? So first of all, we know that in the Torah, Shavuot has no independent existence. It's the 50th day after Pesach. The Karaites held it was the 50th day after the Sunday after Pesach. They'll have it a week later this year because we started the Omer on Sunday night. They like to start the Omer on Saturday night, whatever. There is no independence for Shavuot. In many ways, the holiday of Shavuot is the Shmini Atzeret. It's the Atzeret of Sukkot. And we know in Mishnaic literature, Atzeret is the holiday of Shavuot. Whenever the Mishnah uses the term Atzeret, it doesn't mean Shmini Atzeret. It means the holiday of Shavuot. On Sukkot, we have 7 days, and then we have Shmini Atzeret. And on Pesach, we have 7 days, and then the Atzeret, 7 weeks later. Of Shavuot. And some explain we should do that in the fall also. 7 days of Sukkot and Shmini Atzeret should be 7 weeks later. The problem is it'd be in the middle of the winter and we don't have holidays in the winter. All our holidays are from the spring to the fall. Hanukkah is an exception for reasons we won't get into now about light. And obviously Hanukkah is a later day holiday, but Hanukkah is the only holiday in the winter. It's the only holiday that starts in the second half of the month after the 15th. Most of our holidays are in the 15th of the month, a full moon, Pesach, Sukkot, Purim, Tu Bishvat, Tu B'Av, 15th, full moon. And the ones that aren't in the full moon are in the first half of the month when the moon is getting bigger, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Shavuot, etc. So it appears to me that Pirkei Avot is a continuation of this idea that the Moshe Rabbeinu recommended or ordered that we study the laws of the festival on the festival. There are no really Hilchot Shavuot. If you look in the Shulchan Aruch, Hilchot Shavuot is included in Hilchot Pesach. It's just sort of the last part of Hilchot Pesach. So what is Pirkei Avot? Pirkei Avot is how do we accept Torah? It's the laws. What is a Jew supposed to do to prepare themselves for the acceptance of the Torah? That's what Pirkei Avot is. So that's 7 weeks of preparation, 6 weeks, whatever, of preparation for Shavuot. And that would explain what all the commentaries are bothered with. The first Mishnah in Perkei Avot seems so out of place. Moshe Kibbutz Torah Sinai, Umasar Yoshua, Yoshua the Skenim. Moshe Rabbeinu got the Torah at Mount Sinai and he passed it to Yoshua and then went through till the Anshei Knesset Gedolah. We did discuss last year that the first chapter per Kevod is basically a history of the transmission of our Masorah. It goes through historically from Moshe to Anshei Knesset Gedolah, the men of the Great Assembly. That's the beginning of the Second Temple period. Until then, we say nothing because that's our Tanakh. You don't have to say anything. You want to know what happened? Read the Tanakh. Tanakh is closed. The Second Temple period begins. There are no prophets. So we begin with Anshei Knesset Gedolah. Then we have, you know, Shimon HaTzadik, the last of the Anshei Knesset Gedolah, Tiknas Yisoko, the five pairs of scholars, ending with Hillel and Shammai, the Sukkot, and then we go in order. All our Nisim, Rabban Gamliel and Hillel, Rabban Gamliel, etc. So it's really the transmission of our Masorah. But the question is, why does the Pirkei Avot start Sar Moshe Kibbel Torah Mishena? That should be in Masechet Brachot. In Masechet Brachot, where we open up the Mishnah, so the Mishnah should tell us that Moshe got the Torah at Sinai. This is the middle of nowhere. Pirkei Avot, we'll discuss where it's placed in the Mishnah. Why here in Pirkei Avot? So the Rav Avadya Meir Bar Tanura, who's the most, I guess, important and famous commentary on the Mishnah, 14th, 15th, end of the 15th, beginning of the 16th century, Italian rabbi, and he's a rabbi in Bar Tanura. And then he moved to Israel. And he wrote the classic commentary on the Mishnah. So he has a famous comment that, the Greeks and everybody has ethics. Every normal society has ethical values. So we also have ethics, very nice. And it's basically nice advice. This is rabbi's thought, but it doesn't have the same force as law. You know, Hilchot Shabbos, that you got to do. You know, Alti Frosh Min Hatzibur, or all these nice things, you know, there are four character traits in man. You'd be like, that's a very nice, but it's not binding. It's not obligatory. It's what rabbis say. So the Bar Tanura says, in order to disabuse ourselves of that notion, the editors of the Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, put this Mishnah of Moshe Kibbel Torah Mishinai to tell us, no, the ethics are also from Har Sinai. Ethics also come from Har Sinai. That's the famous comment of the Bar Tanura. But based on what we're saying, not that it disagrees, it's because if Pirkei Avot is the preparation, is the lead up to the laws of Shavuot, so obviously it's going to begin Moshe Kibbel Torah Mishinai. The notion of Shavuot is Kabbalat HaTorah, and therefore Pirkei Avot, and that's why we're learning Pirkei Avot. Why learn? We don't learn whenever you want, whenever you want. But we learn Pirkei Avot, no, because these are the laws of Shavuot. Normally, we do 30 days in advance. A lot. Okay, so here, maybe we're doing a little longer for the preparation of the Torah. We need a little bit longer. So we study Pirkei Avot, so we have to begin Moshe Kibbel Torah Mishinai. Perhaps that's why the first Mishnah appears here as it does, which is in a sense really out of place or long. Now, where is Nezikin? Where's Nezikin? Where is Pirkei Avot? So I already said it's in Nezikin. It's in the fourth of the six orders of the Mishnah. So I'll throw it open to questions if anybody wants to interject. Why is Pirkei Avot? If you're editing the Mishnah, where would you put Pirkei Avot? I'm not sure I know the answer, but where does Pirkei Avot? Does it belong in Moed, in Zraim? Like with which section of Jewish law? There are six orders in the Mishnah. Each one has its own theme. Laws of agriculture, laws of the holidays, family life, nashim, laws of business, and then kodshim, the sanctity of the temple, and tahara, purity and impurity. So where does Pirkei Avot belong? So we could have said it belongs at the beginning, the introduction to as we'll soon see in the Mishnah we're going to do. Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi decided to put it in the end. He stopped it in the end of Nezikin, after Bava Kama, Bava Metzia, Bava Batra, you know, the heavy duty stuff, contract law and property rights and law, assault and battery and our judicial system, all the Nezikin, which is considered in circles of learning, the meat and potatoes of learning. The Talmud says, Harotzel Lachkim, if you want to get smart, it's funny, if you want to, you know, you want to tax your brain, you want to do exercise in your brain, learn the laws of monetary, learn monetary law. So that's why all yeshivas, that's what they basically study. Whether it's a good idea, the focus they do, that's all other discussion. But the Gemara says, Harotel Lachim, they study monetary law. So Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi put Pirkei Avot there. So they, I think, unless somebody has another reason, the simple reason is because That's where ethics are most needed. You don't need ethics in the shul. Like, I mean, maybe you do, but, you know, in shul, people don't cheat. People don't offer their rabbi like, you know, a deal like a little under the table there. That's not how, we don't have to worry about that in on Shabbos. We have to worry about that in the business world. Nizikin, the test of ethical personality is how we act in the business world. And we know that over and over again, this is obvious, you know, Nasata v'natata be'emunah, the first question the Talmud says God asks us, were we honest in our business dealings? There are more laws in the Torah than any other area of Jewish law. I wrote last week, the Divrei Torah that Rashi says we left Egypt in order to be honest in our monetary. That's al menat kein. It's like beyond belief what Rashi says, because it says in the Torah, have honest ways, because I'm the Lord your God who took you out of Egypt. Very nice. What does honest ways have to do with leaving Egypt? So Rashi says al menat kein. I took you out of Egypt. I didn't take you out of Egypt to eat matzah or to have Shabbos. I took you out of Egypt so you could be honest in your business dealings. So Pirkei Avot, in many ways, is the most important of, I would argue, really the most important of the Masechtot. And that's, again, the Moshe Kibbel Tor Misinai. You know, and of course, it's the foundation of Torah. And that's why the custom developed to study it in the lead up to Shavuot. I think the more, what other people often say, a more classical reason is that the summertime people are lax, you know, we're sort of, there's no school and people are on vacation and the weather's nice. And, you know, we let our guard down a little bit until Elul, or, you know, until the shofar. But so some say that's why it's most important to study it at this time. Okay, whatever, that's just one little idea. Now, I mentioned, it's a fascinating idea, Pirkei Avot. You know, rabbis have specialties, especially in today's world. I was talking to my students yesterday at chat where I teach. So we're talking about rabbis and halacha, whatever, choosing different things. Somebody asked, how do you know how to pick a rabbi? So we learn in Pirkei Avot, Aseh Lecha Rav, make for yourself a rabbi. And I said, what's the most important word of that phrase, Aseh Lecha Rav? What's the most important of the three words? Lecha. The rabbi has to be for you, has to be your rabbi. You can't pick a rabbi who has a different worldview. It's very, people don't realize that sometimes. Often they want the rabbi to be very different. You know, I'm like very modern, but the rabbi should be very, you know, extreme. No, the rabbi should, I mean, has to be, obviously you expect the rabbi to be a little bit more, but the rabbi has to be in your world. If your rabbi doesn't go to university and you went to university, you don't ask him questions. How do you balance your university life and learning Torah? Or he's not a Zionist. You're not a Zionist. So what are you going to a Zionist rabbi for? You go to a rabbi who reflects your worldview. Aseh Lecha Rav. The rabbi has to be in your sort of, realm, you know, so you have to have a rabbi, but you can't pick and choose. You know, I want this to be, oh, he's lenient here, or he's strict here, he's strict there, she maybe, whatever. You can't pick and choose. But in today's world, you have to pick and choose, because in today's world, it's impossible for any rabbi, even Gedolei Yisrael, they can't know everything. The amount of information is unbelievable. So rabbis today specialize. You have a specialist in Hilchot Eruvin, how to build an Eruv. You have a specialist in Mikvot. You have a specialist in business law. You have rabbis who specialize in business law. You have a rabbi who specializes in kashrut, gets a degree in chemistry, so he can have in food production. So it's impossible today. Even Rav Moshe Feinstein or Rav Soloveitchik, they knew almost everything, but you can't know everything. So rabbis specialize. So Pirkei Avot is where you see the specialist the most. It's sort of strange. So I point out there are 22 rabbis. I didn't do this on my own. I took the help in the back here in the Mishnah, in the story. It lists off every rabbi ever quoted in the Mishnah and how often he's quoted. So here it's like, you know, Rav Meir quoted 800 times, you know. So every rabbi. So I just went through the whole list and I looked at all the rabbis who were only quoted once in the Talmud. You know, most rabbis are quoted often, Rabbi Akiva, all the rabbis you know of, because they're quoted all the time. So in Pirkei Avot, we have 22 rabbis who are only quoted in Pirkei Avot, nowhere else. So on the one hand, that's very strange, because it's a sort of a disconnect between the sort of legal expertise and the ethical expertise. And we know, of course, they go hand in hand. Every law reflects an ethical value, and ethical values have to be anchored in law. You can't, you know, have an idea. It has to be anchored in action. So really, ethics in halakha, or agadah in halakha, if you want to call it the sort of classical terminology, are connected. In the Talmud, there's no distinction between halakha and agadah. There is a distinction, but in the Talmud, go smooth from one to the other. The Talmud doesn't say this is more authoritative, less authoritative. It's go together. So here in Pirkei Avot, but it's true. You have people who's were great darshanim. I'm imagining some of Pirkei Avot, like most of Midrash. What's most of Midrash? Most of Midrash are rabbis, you know, speeches. There was another law we had is that you couldn't learn Tanakh in the afternoon. This is an amazing law. Halavai, this should be our problem. You're not allowed to study Megillat Rut on Shabbos afternoon or Megillat Esther. Why not? Or Yeshayahu for that matter. Why not? Because the rabbi gives a drasha before Mincha. The rabbi gives a shir, and we want everybody to go to the shir. And if you're studying Megillat Esther, it's so exciting and so interesting. I'm learning at home. I like this Esther stuff. I got to read it. I got to finish it. So the rabbi said, I can't learn. You can't study any Tanakh. Because you won't go to the rabbi shir. So most of the midrashim, yelamdeinu rabbeinu, are often drashot of the rabbis that the rabbis gave, and that's why they often start with stories and all kinds of interesting. Because any good speaker has to begin with a joke and has to tell a story. He's not going to just pure halacha. He's talking to a wide audience. People are not interested in that. Most people. So that's what master midrash is. It's really the rabbinic speech. So clearly you have rabbis who specialize in this area, and you have that in Pirkei Avot. So you have 20, I'll just mention a few of them. This is like the Anshei Knesset Hagdola. The only time the Anshei Knesset Hagdola is mentioned in the Mishnah is in that first Mishnah in Pirkei Avot, which is actually quite fascinating because the Anshei Knesset Hagdola, we today have the Anshei Knesset Haktana, where they in since 1948, I don't want to talk politics. But as I mentioned, I think it's a beautiful idea that the Israeli Knesset has 120 members. I always mention this. I think, you know, people like to criticize Israel, secular, this, all kinds of things. Ben Gurion, whatever you want to think about him, he was rooted in our tradition. He wasn't an observant person, but he understood our tradition very well. And he knew that the Anshei Knesset Agdola were the people who established the Second Commonwealth, and the Jewish people are coming back to Israel after the Babylonian exile. And they were the ones who set the patterns in life that we have 2,600 years later. They established our Shmona Esrei. The Shmona Esrei that we say today was composed by the Anshei Knesset Gola 2,600 years ago, except for the 19th bracha of Bilam Al-Shini. That comes later. And they did all the brachot. You know, according to the Torah, you don't have to say any brachot except Brachat Hamazon. So, and then maybe Birchat HaTorah, but that you make a brach on food, that's all Anshei Knesset HaGdola. Then we make Kiddush on Friday night, it's Anshei Knesset HaGdola. According to the Torah, you say, you go to shul, you say, Atakidashta, you daven marv, you say, I sanctify the day. I don't have to take a cup of wine and make Kiddush. That was the Anshei Knesset HaGdola, Havdalah. So, but that's all in the Gemara. And the Gemara says they're called Anshei Knesset HaGdola because they were so great, they reestablished, they returned the glory of the Jewish people. That's why they're the Anshei Knesset HaGdola. We know very few of them by name. Ezra seems to have been the founder of Anshei Knesset HaGdola, but there were 120 of them that we all know. And I think it's a beautiful idea that the Israeli Knesset of today has 120 people. They see themselves, you know, following Halavai, if only they could follow to be in the footsteps of the Anshei Knesset Gdola. So this is the only time they're mentioned in the Mishnah. Okay, but that's kind of understandable because they're before Rabbinic Judaism. But somebody like Rav Elazar ben Arach is only mentioned in Pirkei Avot. Who's Rav Elazar ben Arach? Anybody want to throw out? Be like a tough teacher. Okay, so Rav Elazar ben Arach is one of the five students of Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai. And it's really a very tragic.
Was he the one who started and then forgot?
Yeah. That's the one. So according to one opinion in the Mishnah, if all the students in the world are on one side of the ledger, and Rav Elazar ben Arach is on the other, he weighs them all down. He was greater than everybody else all combined. And we never, ever hear a peep out of him in the rest of the Talmud. He's like absent in the Mishnah. He doesn't exist. What happened to him? So the Talmud has a very tragic story We're not going to get into the whole thing now. We mentioned it a little bit last year. Basically, he went on vacation. He went to live in some fancy schmancy area with nice, spas. And, he forgot his Torah. He forgot his Torah. I'm imagining the Gemara is exaggerating a little bit because it says that when he came back, they gave him an aliyah. He instead, it said, HaChodesh HaZeh Lachem. This month is a new month, HaChodesh. And he couldn't read. He forgot how to read. So he read ha-cheresh, the resh and the dalit, and it looks the same, chodesh and cheresh. So, of course, that's the rabbi saying cheresh means he's deaf. He was like deaf to Judah. I don't think it literally means it. But so that's the tragic story of Rav Elazar ben Arach, who's mentioned only in Pirkei Avot and mentioned as perhaps the greatest potential, the greatest of all the students, Riochanan ben Zakkai, Elisha ben Avuya. Oh, that we understand perhaps why. Again, many of these people appear in the Gemara. The stories in Gemara, but in the Mishnah, Elisha ben Avuya, the great heretic, the famous heretic of teacher of Rav Meir, who Rav Meir remained close with. But interesting, we do quote him. We quote him twice. To teach children, and we'll get there. He's later on coming up, but they didn't expunge him or Rav Elazar ben Arach either. Rav Elazar ben Arach is quoted for the teachings they gave. Perhaps the most interesting one I would say is, there are 22 of them, but. Yehuda ben Tema. Yehuda ben Tema is the one who says we should be as strong as a lion, as swift as an eagle, and in worshiping God. So how do we worship God? And he's the one who sets up our life trajectory. At five, you learn Mishnah. At five, you learn Tanakh. At 10, Mishnah. 15, Gemara. Get married at 18. Okay, whatever. And he goes through the whole life cycle of events. So it's very interesting. That's just like an important Mishnah. How do you worship God? When do you worship God? Like it's the basics of our whole existence. That's the only time he appears. The only time is quoted once in the entire Mishnah. It's 4,300 Mishnah. It's something like that. Quoted once. So it's very interesting that you have all these rabbis who were specialists, so to speak. But I said it's on the one end, the little, I don't know, really problematic, but it's kind of interesting, especially. I would say there are two exceptions, and I think exceptions are worthwhile to note. One is Hillel, of course, and the other is Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai, who we just mentioned. If you look at Pirkei Avot, so I mentioned the first chapter is a historical development of our tradition. That goes through the son of Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, Rabbi Gamliel Benosha Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi. And so it goes through about from the Anshei Knesset Agdola, from the beginning of the Second Temple period till about the middle of the third century. So we're talking some 850 years. So the first chapter and the first four Mishnayot of the second chapter cover the first about 850 years. 500 of them are covered in a snap, like before until Hillel and Shammai, we go very quickly. Rabbinic Judaism was in its infancy, hadn't really developed yet. And then we go a little bit slower until the third century. And then we go back to Hillel. And then it's Hillel's student was Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai. And then we say the five students are Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai. So I think it's instructive that two of the rabbis who are mentioned a lot, both in halachic literature and the rest of the Mishnah and in Pirkei Avot, are probably the two most important rabbis in the Mishnah. There's a third one, of course, but Hillel is, the Pesach. He was the one who said you can bring the Korban Pesach on Shabbat. I don't have to tell you the greatness of Hillel. And Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai, we wouldn't be here today with our view. And when I say we wouldn't be here, I mean there would be no Jewish people. Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai saved the physical and spiritual legacy of the Jewish people because he negotiated with the Romans the Zealots wanted to fight. An impossible fight to win. They weren't going to beat the Romans. They would have gotten wiped out like they did at Masada and everywhere else. They would have wiped them all out like the Bar Kokhba revolt. So many were killed. Then Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai was a peacemaker. He knew the temple had lost its value. It was just a meaningless building that had no purpose anymore. So he didn't even try to save it. He said, I got to recreate Judaism. We're like alcoholics. We have to hit rock bottom. And the only way to get up is to hit rock bottom and then go start again. So Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai, Tein li Yavne v'chachamah, and he saved Judaism. And he builds Judaism. And I just find it interesting. I don't know, just maybe it's meaningless, but it's something that it struck me that these are the sort of the greatest rabbi. The third one, of course, I think in any discussion you have to put of the greatest, I mean, it's hard. We don't judge like who's greater, but we know there are certain rabbis who make historical contributions, and the Midrashim pick up on that. Without this person, this wouldn't have happened, is Rabbi Akiva, of course. And Rabbi Akiva is only mentioned once in all of Pirkei Avot. So I find that kind of interesting. I don't exactly know why, but I just point. Okay. Okay. I think that's enough of introduction. If anybody has any questions, please let me know. Okay. I'm just looking at the comment. Yeah. Debbie, the judges need to realize they are not above the law. Absolutely. That's judges always have to realize that we have very high demands of leadership. I don't want to give a shear in leadership, you know, Rabbi Jonathan Sacks, Alev Shalom, spoke about that a lot, and it's a big problem. I'll just say one comment on the Shem Shemaim. You know, leaders have a greater obligation to act for the sake of heaven. Me and you, well, I don't know. In other words, regular people, it doesn't really matter why we do things. The Mishnah says, the Gemara says, in many many places, that you should always do Torah mitzvot. You should learn Torah, study Torah, and do mitzvot for the wrong reason. Because from the wrong reason, come to the right reason. Who cares? Who cares why I keep Shabbos? I keep Shabbos because it's in my neighbors. I'll be insulted. Whatever. Obviously, it's nice to keep it because God said so, or you see ethical meaning, whatever. But lo lam yasok adam. You should always do mitzvot, not for the right reason. There is an exception, and the exceptions is our leadership. People in political power. People in power. Because see, the Gemara also quotes other opinions that whoever doesn't do mitzvot lishma for the right reason, it would have been better had they not been born. So this is a blatant contradiction. So we discussed this another time, various answers to the contradiction of these Gemara. Tosfot brings it up like 8 times every time it appears a lot in the Talmud, this expression. A person should always do mitzvot not for the right reason. And Tosfot always asks, yeah, but the Gemara in Brachot says that if you do mitzvot for the wrong reason, it would be better not to be born. What's going on here? So you could argue, like I often like to say, 2 different opinions. That's okay. But so one of the answer really based on the Netziv, the great Rosh Yeshiva in Velazhen, he doesn't exactly phrase it the way I'm phrasing it, but I think it, based on his writing, the idea is that those who are in leadership have to act for the sake of heaven. Why is it so important for those in leadership to act for the sake of heaven? Because we mention this also all the time, because a leader always has to hurt people. By definition, a leader has to make tough decisions. So I just heard this morning on the radio that they've told the doctors in the hospital to have no elective surgery, 0. Our intensive care units are totally overrun, the most they've ever been, and they can't cope. And so they're cutting. And I just heard one of the doctors, one of the infectious disease specialists on the radio here all the time, said, you understand, these are not optional, surgery. When they say it's elective, it doesn't mean it's like optional. It means it's a cancer patient who needs surgery. He's going to die, but it's like it's scheduled in 2 weeks. You know, they don't have to do it this second. So it's like unbelievable. So you have to make a decision. Is it the right decision, wrong decision? That's not for me. I have no idea. I'm not expert enough to know what will be better for public health. But somebody's making a decision that people are going to die because of the decision. Who gets a vaccine? But that's what it means to be a leader. That's if you can't handle the heat, don't go into the business. So because leaders hurt people, that's okay. And that's why we have in Pirkei Avot, it's so important to work L'Shem Shemaim, and it's wonderful. It's okay to hurt people because you're helping more people. But if your political decision, it's not only in politics, everybody has their own leadership. You're the head of a school, whatever it is, the president of the shul. When you make a decision, not what's best interest for everybody, but what will get you reelected, what's good. So then you're hurting people for personal gain. That's better. You shouldn't have been born. And that's, I think, to me, the greatest challenge of our leadership today. Our system, whatever. What can I tell you? There are very few leaders who we can't be perfect. I don't expect, no human being can be 100% motivated, but we can be 85% motivated to do public good. And many of our leaders are. I think sometimes, you know, the media, the many of the leaders really are. They go in, but sometimes the system is awful. It makes it much worse. In other words, people who are good people go in and the system is so messed up. And other times, whatever, they get corrupted, they're in leadership too long, all kinds of reasons. But many people do go in and do intend. can. So that's all I'll just point out when you talk about leadership. It's a tremendous responsibility to be a leader. It's the greatest, I think it's the greatest thing a Jew can do. More important than learning Torah, more important than anything, is the being a leader. I mean, being taking a position. Everybody can take literal leadership. Those who are more talented, more capable, take on bigger positions. You know, Jonathan Sacks was an amazing leader. I mean, he was the leader of more non-Jews, perhaps, than Jews, probably, you know, in England and around the world. Non-Jews looked up to him. It's fantastic, you know. He was such a Kiddush Hashem. So you, many of the great leaders who we lost this year, Dr. Lam and so many of Dr. Chorsky, and I mean, it was, we all know how it was a tough year. Some of the greats, Adin Steinsaltz, some of the great people we lost this year. And these were tremendous leaders who acted for benefit Israel. So that's what Pirkei Avot often, you have all these exhortations on leadership to act in particular ways. Okay, it's exactly halfway through. So let's get to the actual Mishnah. Those who want to figure what we did last year, maybe we'll come back to it next year, in 2 years, please, whatever. But you can listen online. The 20 shiurim of last year are online, if anybody, all the shiurim we do on Zoom, the hundreds of shiurim, and even before Zoom, of course, we have. So anybody's always welcome to listen online. We're going to start. If you have a Pirkei Avot, great. If not, okay, for next week, but it's okay. I'll read it and translate. We're Perek Gimel. Sometimes it's different in each publication, how they number them, because Pirkei Avot is not really, it's not published in the Gemara. It's separate books. There's no Gemara in Pirkei Avot. So I have it as Mishnah Tet Zayin in Perek Gimel. It's the second last Mishnah, third last in Perek Gimel, in the third chapter. Rav Elazar ben Azariah Omer. Rav Elazar ben Azariah said. So we all know Rav Elazar ben Azariah. We met him at the Pesach Seder. Harayani kiven shivim shana velo zachiti sheitemar yitziyah Mitzrayim b'leilot. Right, Rav Elazar ben Azariah, of course, the great compromise candidate, talking on leadership. So often that's what happens in the world of leadership. The famous dispute, Rabban Gamliel had insulted. Rabban Gamliel was a great leader, but like everything, all great qualities, if you take them too far, have negative side effects. That's Rav Kook, I believe. I'm not sure if it was a Kook. I heard it's a beautiful, very, very deep idea that Avraham Avinu had a Yishmael, and Yaakov and Yitzchak had an Esav. Why is that? So Avraham Avinu is the overflow of chesed. Avraham, you know, kindness and graciousness and helping other people. And sometimes that can go to an extreme. Sometimes you help people. Sometimes you have to fight. And that's what Sarah saw. We got to throw out Yishmael. I'm not going to know who's right, but that's the idea that Yishmael represents sometimes if you're too nice to people, it's not good. And the chesed went too far. And Yitzchak is gvura, is strength, is, you know, power. So Esav is the power gone too far, the hunter, the kill, you know, so whatever you can make of that, I'm not an expert, but that I remember hearing that many years ago, this idea, I believe in the name of Rav Kook, but the idea is true, anything can be taken too far. Rabban Gamliel was an amazing leader, and he was a very strong leader, and we needed a strong leader. It's the generation after Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai. And they're in Yavne, and Jewish life, who knows if it's going to survive. And we look back, you know, of course, you know, we're talking about it's going to survive. Not so simple. Many Jews have been lost throughout history. The 10 tribes. I mean, that's most of the Jewish people. They're no longer. Like, well, there is no guarantee, you know. I'm not getting into the prophecies, all that stuff. Well, so there'll be 8 Jews left. But who knows? So Rabban Gamliel took very difficult decisions, and he ran an authoritarian regime because he had no choice at that time. But there are negative side effects. So his negative side effects was he was a little bit too harsh, a lot too harsh on Rabbi Yoshua. He mistreated him. The famous story on they had a dispute on the calendar. He had to do what he had to do. Rabbi Gamliel was right. I have said it 100 times with all the disputes, Orthodox, conservative, Reform, secular. We all agree when, you know, Pesach is. That's why with the carrots, it was such a big fight. The carrots are not part of the Jewish people. They celebrated Shavuot a week later on Sunday. Can you imagine if the Reform Jews had Pesach on one day and Orthodox Jews on another day? Oh my gosh. So we argue, but we're one people. We have one calendar. The first mitzvah given to the Jewish people is the calendar. The calendar, without a calendar, a united calendar, we're not one people. So Rabban Gamliel had to do what he had to do, Rabbi Yoshua, but he did it very harshly. Anyways, and he did it more than once on 3 occasions, the Talmud says. So they impeached him temporarily. So they impeached him, and no, they're not going to give it to Rabbi Yeshua. That's not nice. That's like a slap in the face, because, you know, Rabbi Yeshua is the one arguing. So, like, it's not nice to Rabbi Gamliel to give it. It's also a very interesting idea. So they were going to, who's next in line is Rabbi Akiva. So they're going to appoint Rabbi Akiva. And, I can't appoint Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva, he's like a shepherd. He's like a, and you often find in the Gemara, I find this amazing. I've noticed this all the time. So often the Gemara refers to Akiva as Akiva, not as Rabbi. Like Rabbi Akiva was saying, then the rabbi say, Akiva. You said Akiva, like he's this little like farm boy, like at the age of 40, he learned Aleph Beit. I don't know exactly. You don't find that mayor. It's always Rav Meir. It's always Rav Elazar. It's never like, but Akiva is often, Akiva, even the famous Gemara in Makot, where Akiva Nichamtanu, Akiva Nichamtanu, Akiva, you've comforted us. You've comforted us. So it's very interesting. The Rabbi Akiva's got no yichis. He's I don't care. So yes, he's the greatest rabbi, but we can't make him. People won't accept him. We're not going to accept him. He didn't know Aleph Beit. I remember him as a kid, the Total Am Haaretz. So they had to go to a third candidate with no baggage. Yeah, you got to find somebody, you know, so the media can't tear them apart. So they went to some young guy who nobody ever heard of, 18 years old. He has no baggage. He can barely vote. So they go to Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, and they point to Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. He's a compromise candidate. And that's how he becomes the Nasi. And then we read about him. He was very different than Rabbi Gamliel. He had a much open educational approach. Then we're not going to discuss that now. We discussed it other times. Rabbi Elazar had a very different approach. And then finally, Rabbi Gamliel apologized to Yeshua, so they reappointed. But they didn't. Weren't going to kick out Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. So they had shifts. They took turns. One week, this rabbi, with the Gemara says, actually, 2 out of 3 weeks, Rabbi Gamliel spoke. How do you know who's the rabbi of the shul, right? Who speaks on Shabbos morning? So when there's an assistant rabbi, you know how important these assistant rabbis. How often does he? I mean, maybe I shouldn't say this, but how often does the assistant rabbi speak? Does he get to speak on the second day of Rosh Hashanah, or does he only get between Mincha Maariv to give the shiur? You know, so you can see like how often the person speaks. He's the head here. So the Gemara says Rabbi Gamliel would speak 2 out of 3 weeks, and Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah would speak 3 weeks. And sometimes they'd have a discussion. The Gemara would say Shabbat Shalmi Haya. Somebody wasn't in shul or went to different shul. Said, who Shabbos was it this week? Who gave the drasha this week in shul? Rabbi Gamliel or Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah? So anyways, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah and Rabbi Soloveitchik, of course, pointed out a very beautiful idea that this is the Gemara's way of saying they're different approaches to education. That Rabbi Gamliel had a very elitist approach. Only the elite should learn. In Harvard University, you don't let anybody in because you won't be Harvard University anymore. You want a great yeshiva. That's why the yeshivas in Europe produce so much more than they do today. Today, anybody can go to advanced yeshivas. It's very nice to us, but at a certain point, it's a detraction, because there's no competition. There's no reason to excel because, you know, anybody can sit there, but you only allow in the top 10 people. You'll get the 10 best people. Boy, will they work hard. So that was the approach of Rabbi Gamliel. Only the elite can come in. And Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, everybody can come in. And the different approaches, and they had other differences. So Rav Soloveitchik said, when the Gemara says they brought back Rabbi Gamliel, it's teaching us there's no one approach. Different approaches, different people. Anyways, that's Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. So let's actually get to Pirkei Avot. Okay, so Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah Meir, Im ein Torah, ein derech eretz. Whoa, so that's what we're talking. If there's no Torah, there's no derech eretz. So what does that mean? What's derech eretz? So the Shulchan Aruch derech eretz, we know, we're going to Yafet, Talmud Torim, derech eretz, Rav Shimshon Fal Hirsch, Torim, derech eretz. So the Shulchan Aruch derech eretz means the way of the land. So the simple meaning of derech eretz is to live in the world. Derech eretz. The way of the world, the way of the land. In other words, you want to be a contributing member of society. In other words, the Torah is not meant to be lived in isolation. It's today, some people want to be in isolation. That's a historical result of historical tragedy. The Torah is not meant to be in the middle of, you know, you live in the ghetto. The Torah has to be everywhere, in the middle of the street. When Avraham Avinu prayed for a storm, Ula yesh chamishim tzadikim betoch Ha'ir, in the midst of the city. And Ibn Ezra points that out, that 50 tzaddikim learning in yeshiva are not going to save a city. 50 tzaddikim on Bay Street or Wall Street, as you would say in New York, Bay Street in Toronto, in the middle of corporate Canada, in the middle of corporate culture, 50 tzaddikim who are CEOs of companies, that's going to save That's going to influence. That will save an entire city. Chamishim tzadikim b'tochir. Derech Eretz, the simple meaning of Derech Eretz is how to live in the world. That's what it means. We have other interpretations. So in Ein Torah, Ein Derech Eretz, Torah tells us how to live in the world. Torah tells us how to treat strangers, how to be honest in business, how to treat our parents, how not to gossip. The Torah is the Derech Eretz. That's what Torah is. So in Ein Torah, now, what do you mean Ein Torah, Ein Derech Eretz? So that's already a pretty bold statement. He says like this. He says, if there's no Torah, what do you mean? You can't have Derech Eretz without Torah. So that's already a little bit hard. So I don't know that I don't think I can't believe he means that literally. You can have people who are good people without Torah. But so either you interpret Torah to mean not actually Torah, but like, you know, guidance. In other words, Torah in its broadest sense. But basically what it means, if you just are concerned with worldly affairs, you can't have anything. You need an instruction guide. You need Torah to have Derech Eretz. Now, of course, we also know that Derech Eretz, the Hirschian approach, so to speak, of Derech Eretz, which is takes a little bit living in the world, he sort of takes it in a more intellectual way. In other words, that you have to study science and you have to study culture and you have to live within, you know, the culture you're living. So of course, he made Torah in Derech Eretz. Again, the Torah molds us in how to do that, guides us in how to live within the world. But Imein Derech Eretz Ein Torah, maybe perhaps it's the more important side. Without Derech Eretz, you can't have Torah. So without being involved in the world, your Torah is almost meaningless. That's what I was saying before. The Chamishim Tzadikim B'tochir. Imein Derech Eretz Ein Torah. Now, if you want to interpret Derech Eretz like you were taught in kindergarten, like manners, you know, Derech Eretz. You have Derech Eretz for somebody. Respect. So it's even more obvious. Imein Derech Eretz Ein Torah. That means if a person doesn't have basic manners, that's what I said. That's what Perkei Avot is all about. It's a preparation for Shavuot. It's what are the laws of getting the Torah? One can't get the Torah without, just let me try to turn off my phone here. One cannot get the Torah without Derech Eretz. You mean Derech Eretz, and it's all meaningless. So that's what all Perkei Avot is. So that makes very great sense if on the manner sense. Without manners or human decency, you can't have Torah. Rav Hirsch would believe Imein Derech Eretz Ein Torah, Rav Soloveitchik. Without the science, you can't have Torah either. You can't understand the Torah. A, you can't understand it without broader knowledge. B, you can't apply it. If you don't understand the ways of the world, Torah is meaningless. You know, we have a famous expression, but the Gemara says, Kol Hadan Din Emet La'amito. A judge who renders din emet, a true verdict to its truth. It's a strange, din emet la'amito, truth to truth. What does that mean? Truth is truth. Truth doesn't need anything else. Either it's true. If it's true, but then you know it isn't true. What do you mean? Truth for truth. Din emet la'amito. So I believe in the Torah, the beginning, one of the commentaries on the Torah quotes a very beautiful idea. You know what? The Torah is truth. But if it's not applied in the right way, it's not truth. Emet la'amito means it's got to be true for the circumstance in which you're living. That's what we said, aselech harav. You talk to a rabbi, he doesn't understand your world. So it may be truth, what he says, but it's not truth for truth. It's not emet la'amito. The judge, that's why you know, we have an oral law. That's why it's not supposed to be written down. We're not supposed to look up everything on a computer. That's why I don't like these things you post on Google, Shaila, and you get a one-line answer. If the rabbi doesn't know the person asking, okay, maybe is this ingredient kosher? Okay, that may be. But if it's a personal question, anything to do with your personal life, if the rabbi doesn't know you, he has no right giving you an answer. You shouldn't, that's not Judaism. We discussed many times, two people can ask the same question, get two different answers. They're both true. They're different because it's emet la'amito, because it has to be truth for truth. So Derech Eretz, Imein Derech Eretz Ein Torah means, you know what? The same ruling that worked in the 19th century in Europe is a disaster in America in the 20th century. And worse in America in the 20th century is a disaster in Israel. It's different people, different societies, and the Torah has to be Derech Eretz. If you don't understand the ways of the world, then you don't know how to apply the Torah into that world. And Therefore, ein Torah im derech eretz, im ein derech eretz ein Torah. There has to be the combination. This is a very Torah Mada, you know, this is a very modern Orthodox Mishnah. But I don't think modern Orthodox is what the Judaism said. Now, it's very interesting. We learned Yafet Talmud Torah im derech eretz. So I was looking at it last night and it actually struck me as very interesting. So that expression, it's nice, Yafet, it's also a funny word. Yafet Talmud Torah im derech eretz. That's Rabban Gamliel, the son of Rabbi Yehuda Nasi. The only time he's quoted in all of Talmud is the son of Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, this famous thing that became the slogan of Shimfer and Fellow Hirsch, the slogan of Neo-Orthodoxy, Yafet Talmud Torah and Derech Eretz. It's nice to have Torah and Derech Eretz, which Hirsch, of course, interpreted in its broadest sense, the ways of the world, culture, science, etc. Now, Yafet Talmud Torah and Derech Eretz means it's not like the only thing, like here, Rabbi Elazar is saying, without Derech Eretz, you don't have Torah. You can't have one without the other. That's not what Rabbi Gamliel, but no, Shor Rabbi Yehuda Nasi said. He said, it's nice. It's nice. It's in other words, it's a little bit lower. Now, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah lived earlier. He lived three generations earlier. So in a certain sense, Rabbi Gamliel, I don't want to call it this a pushback, but he sort of lowers the importance of Derech Eretz. I know that's not how we normally learn it. We normally learn this is a great thing, Yafet Talmud Torah, and it is. But if you study it in the context of Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, who lived three generations earlier, who says, without Derech Eretz, you don't have Torah. It's impossible. And then you come to Rabbi Gamliel, who's listed earlier, because remember, we went historically at the beginning, and then we go back to Hillel. So he's the end of that first historical run. So he's quoted earlier, even though he lived later. It's only nice. It's a little bit less. But then, this is what I was trying to think of. It hit me last night. I've learned this. I've read this Mishnah 100 times in my life, and I never thought of this before. And I don't have really a good answer, so I'll throw it out to you. I mean, Sheyegia Shneim Mashkach Adavon. Why is it good? Because if you have both of them, you'll forget this, and you won't have any time. A person, when they asked Rav Soloveitchik once, How is it possible for you to be like the greatest Talmudic genius and you have a PhD in philosophy? Like, when do you read all this like non-Jewish stuff? Like, how where do you have the time? So Rabbi Soloveitchik, this is a story I heard. So Rabbi Soloveitchik says, on the time that you're wasting talking about when I can do it, that's when I study it. In other words, you don't have time. A person is getting a PhD and wants to be a Talmud Chacham has no time to sin. So now it's already a little bit more important because it prevents you from sinning. It's not just nice. It's sort of, he's going up. And then, Kol Torah Sheini Mamelacha Sofa B'Tei Lavek Ororadav One. And any Torah that doesn't have work with it, you're finished. B'Tei Lav, the Torah will become meaningless, will become nothing. If your Torah is just Torah and nothing else, you don't apply, you don't have a means of livelihood, whatever, Melacha, B'Tei Lav, it's meaningless. It's not only meaningless, it's sinful. Gorerat Avon. This is a really powerful statement. I mean, it's unbelievably powerful. Sofa b'teila, it's meaningless and worse than meaningless. Gorerat avon, it causes sin. And then his next line, kol ha'melimim hatzibur, work for the congregation, communal work, and which is fascinating, the connection. So the true matter is Rabban Galil begins with yafeh, it's nice. And then he says, it's more than nice, because if you'll forget, you won't know how to sin, you don't have time to sin. Not only is it more than nice, and then, you know what? If you don't do it, your Torah is going to become meaningless, and then you're going to sin. So in a sense, now he's upgrading. In other words, so he's like upgrading Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, or he's saying the same thing. Can the moment the other? But I just find it interesting. I don't know exactly why he starts Yafet Talmud Torah and Derech Eretz. It's very nice. And then he continues, if you don't have this, your Torah is meaningless and will cause sin. So it's more than nice. But anyways, I don't know. I throw that out if you have any ideas. But really here, and you have this a lot in Perkei Avot, but you have this a lot that we know the most important message you have to say over and over again. The rabbi has, they have to talk about the same themes, especially in ethics, because people need reminders. So this is a very similar idea. Torah and Derech Eretz. Okay, let's go quickly. Yes.
Just a quick note. In modern Hebrew, you have this concept of yifui koach, authorization, a power of attorney. And when judges in the Israeli Supreme Court, for example, write opinions, they say, yafim divrei hashofet so-and-so. They don't mean nice. They mean worthy, valuable.
Right. So even if valuable, I agree. Very good. No, thank you. But valuable means it's valuable, but it doesn't mean it's essential. So he starts off, it's valuable. And then he says, you won't sin. That makes it even more important. Then he says, and if you don't do it, your Torah will be meaningless. It's not like you'll have Torah and you'll sin. You won't have Torah. Torah bitela. That's a really strong word, like our chametz. We do bitul chametz. So it's nothing. It's like the dust of the earth. So fa bitela, to say Torah bitela, it's like unbelievable. How can you say such a thing? Gorerit avon. It's like your Torah causes you to sin. And we know that. That's what the Gemara says. If you don't teach a child to trade, you're teaching him how to sin. And we know people can misuse Torah. We know Torah is so powerful. It can be used for good, but it can be used for evil. So I just find yafeh, even if you want to take it, which I think you're correct, right? This it's more than nice. It's like, it's good, but good. I think he's developing the theme. He's starting and then he's saying, it's nice. Okay, now I have your attention. It's even more than that, whatever. But I just point out the similarity. Okay, we'll just do one more thing. I see it's getting a little bit late. Im ein chokma ein yirah, im ein yirah ein chokma. You can't have wisdom and fear. Well, again, these words are hard to translate because they have multiple meanings and different people interpreted them different ways. So im ein chokma is wisdom and yirah is fear. But yirah in the Bible is really generally awe, not fear. Pachad, Rav Soloveitchik points out, on Rosh Hashanah, we davenu, b'chein tein pachtecha, Hashem olkecha. Rosh Hashanah is the only time of the year we want to fear God. But that's not a good Jewish attitude normally. We don't like that normally. It's not healthy. Rav Soloveitchik has a famous piece about that we don't have time to get into now. But yirah generally, ish imova aviv tira'u, it does not mean to fear your parents. It's not a good relationship to fear your parents. It needs to be in awe. Wow, my parents are so smart. They have life experience. I mean, you know how kids are, but you know, when they get older, they have more of that. But yirah, they're being awe. So they're being awe of God, to study God's wisdom, you know, the world he created, his Torah, the beauty of the Torah. So and chokmah is generally understood to be worldly wisdom. The Gemara says, you know, chokma b'goyim tamin. If they tell you they're really smart, non-Jews, you know, the best doctors in the world are not. Believe them. If they tell you Torah is the best in the non-Jews, don't be that. No, their Torah is not better than ours, so to speak. But wisdom, there is lots of wisdom. So chokma, but what it means here, but chokma in this context, that's meaning ain chokma, you know, chokma bina bedat. Knowledge in intelligence, you can't have fear of God. Im ein chokma, then you can't have yirah. In other words, to be afraid of God, you don't need any wisdom. As a matter of fact, that's often what we teach our kids. Kids often have that. They don't have the wisdom, but they have this sort of instinctive fear of God. God will strike me down with lightning. I'm afraid of God. What's God going to do? That's how kids are. That's a very unsophisticated approach. So if you want to have a good approach to God, you need wisdom. You have to study. The Rambam would understand it. Imam Chokhmah, you have to study philosophy. You have to understand God a little bit more, understand what we can about God, which is not so much. We can understand what God isn't. We can understand the attributes of God. We, as the Ramban expresses, the Torah is the autobiography of God. You want to understand God, you study Torah, but you have to study nature. So in order to have yirah of God, you need to have wisdom. So you have im ein chokmah, ein yirah, but im ein yirah, ein chokmah. But if your wisdom gets ahead of you, and you have it's not grounded in morality. That's, of course, a big problem we have in our society of today, that our wisdom is, science sometimes lacks a moral intuition. Now, that's not the job of the scientist so much, but he has to work with, it has to be done in the framework of morality. So in ein yirah, if there's no awe of God, that what you're dealing with is like, then there's no chokmah. I remember many years ago in YU, Rabbi Tendler once saying that a Jewish doctor, he's not a doctor, he's a rofe. He's a, when he goes into medicine and he's healing people, it's not just healing people. He's healing people as a mission from God. This is the godly work. This is what we want. So there has to be, again, the combination of chokmah and yirah. But our worship of God has to be a sophisticated worship. I think that's the most important. From me, when I sort of looking around, I think too many people have a sort of I mean, it's hard. We don't study philosophy. Philosophy is not popular anymore. It's not going to help you in the job market so much. And, you know, but in the medieval period, all the greats, they understood philosophy is the basis. You know, you have to understand what, you know, to study. It's the underpinning of these. But yes, there were great debates, I guess, always throughout history, the importance of philosophy. It doesn't have to be just philosophy, but I'm saying there has to be an appreciation. You can do the same thing by science, just to get awe of God through science, to get awe of God through nature in many different ways. So that's what the mission is saying. Again, there has to be a combination, and the purpose of all this is to make the world a better place. And then the last one, which is the idea of Ein Bina. This is, again, Bina and Dat, a little bit hard to understand. What's the difference, right? Right, Chokhmah, Bina, Vedat. But here we're talking about Bina, Vedat. So we can understand, probably it means knowledge and understanding, or what we might call knowledge and application. Yeah, knowledge is great, but knowledge that is dead knowledge, that is in the corner somewhere, that's not applied to the real world, is useless in a sense.
If you don't have application, your knowledge is meaningless, but you can't apply without knowledge. In other words, too many people want to do things without knowing enough.
You know, I said before, rabbis, you know, can all have different opinions, pick a rabbi and different things, but you have to have a tremendous grounding of knowledge. But knowledge, understanding, and application have to go hand in hand. You can't have one without the other. So Torah has to be applied in the real world. Torah and the world go together. Awe and wisdom go together. You can't have one without the other. And knowledge and understanding go together. And the last one, Em Kemach, Em Torah, Em Torah, Em Kemach. This means Derech Eretz before didn't mean to earn a living. Derech Eretz means wisdom, understanding, knowledge. Because here it says, without flour, this is, everybody knows this one, Imen Kemach in Torah. This is, if you can't make a living, you can't study Torah. You'll be poor. And then without, it requires money. Anything worthwhile in life requires investment. You have to invest and make money. Torah is no different. Right? So, Imen Kemach in Torah, but Imen Torah in Kemach. But if your whole goal is to have more flour, what's the point? What's the point of money if you're not using it properly? That's why I'm a big fan. You know, and the school, like on the giving pledge, you know, I think Warren Buffett and Bill Gates are two of the greatest people alive and have done more for humanity. And the billions and maybe trillions of dollars that they're causing to give to charity is just unbelievable. You know, the founding of the giving pledge, they made tons of money, but they understand that money has a purpose. And if you go on the giving pledge, you know, site, and you read every one of them, they're about 203. It's very beautiful, but it's about 8% of the billionaires. About 92% of world billionaires have not agreed to give away half their wealth to charity. But you read what everybody, it's actually inspiring. It's inspiring to read why these people are giving away money. But that's Im Ein Torah Ein Kemach. You know, Im Ein Kemach Ein Torah. Without a they all realize, and the truth of the matter, when you reach a certain point of wealth, like when you're, you know, I can't afford a fancy car yet, I want to go on vacation. Well, I understand you're working for things you need. I don't know, you need them. You're working things you want. But then there reaches the point where it's like, you know, it's meaningless. And that's often when people get into trouble. They cheat a little bit. They do all kinds of things because they just want a higher market share, because they don't need the money for any real purpose. It's just now a power trip. But if you realize it's Im Ein Torah, Ein Kemach, without a purpose, it's much different. Anyways, that's we'll end here. Just a very, very quickly review. So Pirkei Avot is beautiful. It's instructed learning. It's guided learning, because it's a continuation of Moshe's order that we should study the laws of the festival on the festival to prepare 30 days in advance, whatever. So this is the preparation for the holiday of Shavuot. And that's why the Mishnah begins. Moshe got the Torah at Sinai. And what are the laws of Shavuot? How to be an ethical person, because without Derech Eretz, Ein Torah. Derech Eretz Kadma LeTorah. So Pirkei Avot is the preparation we do for Torah. We say Pirkei Avot, there are specialists and who only appear in Pirkei Avot, that they're ethical, every field. A specialist that we discussed a little bit, Rabbi Elazar ben Azari, on Shekhinah Segulah. And then the idea that life is combining often two opposites together. The importance of acting, of leadership a little bit, how they have to act totally for the sake of heaven, and other people not so much. And then that in life, we have to know how to balance the material and the physical and knowledge and application. We have to know, all of life is a balance. If you want to say, a gesher tsar mo'ad, I'm not sure that's the same thing, but it's the same idea. Anyways, okay, it's 10:29, and I want to wish everybody a Shabbat Shalom, and thank you for coming, and we look forward to seeing you next week, not just for this year, but of course for all our shirim. Sunday morning, we have a doubleheader, Daniel Feldman of Yeshiva University, who's going to give a five-part series on halacha and human relations. He wrote the book, The Right and the Good. He's a tremendous Talmud Chacham, and he's going to talk about the halachot of Bein Adam L'Chaveiro, followed by Rabbi Liebtag. His regular Sunday morning time slot, 11:15, he'll be talking about Mamad Har Sinai, the 5 weeks to study the basically Yitro, the lead up to Har Sinai, and that's on Sunday. And then on Monday, what do we have on Monday? We're starting our religious Zionism class, Rabbi Arishvat, and this week Megillat Ruth. So follow the schedules. We look forward to seeing you, and want to wish everybody a Shabbat Shalom. And thank you very much. Right, any questions? Just let me quickly take a look at the questions.
Shabbat Shalom.
I'm sorry? No. The truth of the matter, this week and next week, I'm teaching at Chatham. I really can't stay late. Starting in 2 weeks, I'll have time, but my schedule at Chat, I have to go and teach, so I really can't stay online. I do apologize for that. So maybe if there's any questions you have, please, I'll be happy to take them actually, next week after that. Okay, Shabbat Shalom. Shabbat Shalom. Thank you.
Shabbat Shalom.
Be well. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.